name is Melanie Bissett, and I'm a member of the User Research Toronto community team. And today I have the pleasure of sitting with
Dale McCrae.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me today, Dale. I'd like to start this conversation by having you introduce yourself and let us know a little bit about your background and how you got into user research.
Sure. So, as I said, my name is Dale McCrae, and I lead a team of user experience researchers at Canada Post. So that is my current role. And in terms of my background, so I really got into research and I really understood the value of research when I was working with Usability Matters. So back then, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but it was really more around the traditional type of research around usability testing, and clients would come to us with a product to say that please test this with this type of customer and kind of give us some insights from there. But in terms of my growth, when that really happened was when I moved to New York. I was able to work for the Information Technology and Telecommunications Agency for the City of New York. And with them, I was really able to understand the value of research in terms of human-centered design workshops, field research, and design sprints as well. So it's not just being the reactive end of research, but it's more about being the generative research where you're really kind of being on the innovation space.
Yeah.
So you're working with other people in a co-creation collaborative space to really uncover, you know, different needs from the business, the people they were trying to serve from a government perspective, and really come up with products and services that way.
Mm-hmm.
So really just coming up with stuff that just doesn't exist. So yeah. It was a really, really interesting time in my career for sure. So that to me was major. I mean, when you get to start to talk about what people touch, what they see, what they feel when they're moving around a city, that's when true innovation can happen. And that's when I was like, wow, research is so much more than just being reactive and measuring the usability of a digital product.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more than that. It's so much more strategic than I had ever pictured it to be before.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a little bit on what kind of projects you worked on in New York, or
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I can talk about that.
Cool.
So one of the most rewarding projects for me was working with a housing development in Queensbridge, Queens. So sorry, it's in Queens, New York, but it's a housing development called Queensbridge.
Okay.
So what the city wanted to do was really bridge the digital divide between the people that lived in this housing development and access to the online space.
Mm.
So what we did as researchers and designers is we went in, we did a bunch of field research, and we talked to some community board organizers, community presidents, that kind of thing, just kind of key people within the area, and really understood what they wanted to see from a governing body like us.
Mm-hmm.
We also really wanted to find out, you know, do they trust the government? Is there any issues around that? Because
yeah.
You can't just kind of go in and say, you need this.
Yeah.
We have to actually ask if they want it, if they're actually going to use it.
For sure.
Will they find it valuable? All of that kind of thing. So there it was a fairly large number of seniors within the housing development too. So that was kind of interesting to learn as well, is in terms of, well, how would you use this and that kind of thing. So so we did some design research in there. We did some co-creation sessions with that group of people to understand what they would want this service to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can kind of picture it being like at a hotel, they hire a third-party service to have that login screen where
mm-hmm.
you go, you get your free Wi-Fi and or the guest name and password, you log in, you see a splash page, and then you have access to online.
Gotcha.
Similar to that experience.
Okay.
So during the co-creation session, what we wanted to do was give them the opportunity to design what that splash page would look like.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of information from the government would you want to see? So we heard that they wanted to see more around employment possibilities, government services, government subsidies, and just really community-focused content.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what that co-creation session was all about. So when we learned all of that stuff, we kind of took it away. We did some designs, and we took the designs back out into the housing development. We walked around, talked to people about what they were seeing on this paper prototype that we had,
mm-hmm.
and if they found it valuable, and if it was kind of readable enough and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Got lots of good feedback on that, which was great. Made some changes. But then the bigger portion of that project was, well, so when we launch this thing and the broadband actually gets installed within the infrastructure of that housing development, what kind of service are we providing after the fact?
Right.
So what if somebody has an issue? Who are they going to call? So what we did is we pieced together a service blueprint to really make sure we covered all of those different touch points and those moments in time for the people that were going to be using the service. So that we kind of had a kickoff kind of party to, for them to come up to a bench and ask us what this was all about and how they would use it and bring up any further concerns they might have. And this was for the whole community, not just for that group of people I talked about before. So that kind of gives you a high-level sense of what that project was. It was really rewarding, and I learned so much about some of the different boroughs around New York, aside from Manhattan and Brooklyn and all that. So it was pretty cool.
That sounds really cool. I like that you got to actually like be in the field where these people are naturally and talk to them. And I think that's like something that is not very like as common in user research yet, but I think it's definitely like getting to that point. People are starting to understand the value of like seeing people use things in a more natural setting than like coming into a lab or something.
Absolutely.
Or being recorded remotely.
Really, environmental context is key. It's super, super critical for that kind of thing. So that to me was a huge kind of pivot in my career.
Yeah.
Cool.
If we can just backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
Before getting into your like background and your career, what was your academic background or like your training at all?
Yeah. So I came from a graphic design background. So I was doing graphic design and print production up until 2009. And then after that, you know, things really started to change. Everything was going more digital. Mm-hmm. Some of the companies I worked for shut down. And so I really kind of had to rethink where I was going.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I was living in Vancouver and I went to BCIT for their new media program.
Nice.
And it's a senior management certificate in new media. So they teach you a breadth of things like coding, design.
Nice. Are you from
media
BC?
Law. No, I'm from Alberta, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So they teach you a breadth of things. And within that, that breadth of offering, they taught information architecture, human-computer interaction, and,
nice.
You know, that kind of stuff. So as soon as I learned that that existed, I was like, ah, yes, this is so me.
Yeah.
I love it. And so that was my focus moving forward. So when I was finished that 12-month full-time program, I approached an agency called DDB, Tribal DDB.
Okay.
And they were looking for an intern and so I just showed them my paper prototypes and all of the work that I'd done in school. You know how all that stuff goes.
Yeah.
And then I got in there as an information architect.
Awesome.
And then from there, I just, my career kind of kept moving forward. I spent a year at Tribal DDB, and then I did, I moved here to Toronto and started to work for the sister agency, Tribal DDB, out here too.
Okay.
So that was 2 years, and then that led up to Usability Matters.
Nice.
Yeah.
And how long were you there at Usability Matters?
I was there for a little under a year, and then I moved on to Virage Shale, and then the New York opportunity happened, so I was like, okay,
wow.
Virage Shale, I gotta go. So it was kind of like some quick hits in terms of different levels of experience.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of a taste of the startup world within Virage Shale, which was great.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff there. And then, so the New York story was by far the most interesting for me personally as like a, where am I going with this UX thing, right?
Yeah.
So
that's cool. So you started as a designer, then you went to information architecture, and now you're in research.
Yeah, from like UX design to research.
Yeah.
I mean, design is always going to be a big part of me, and
always,
it'll never not be a thing for me, so
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've mentioned you've had quite a breadth of experience from being in IA, research design, graphic design, UX design. I'm sure you've had a lot of experience with this next question, but I'm curious to know how and what are some clever ways that you use to get stakeholders involved in research? And this could be like in any experience that you've had. So while you were a designer or while you were an information architect or even now as a researcher, but
Okay, yeah, sounds good. So I wanted to start this question off with kind of how I think about stakeholders and kind of the conversations they have to themselves about what we do and mm-hmm. how we think about what they do. So
yeah.
a lot of times it's common for a researcher or a designer to be like, oh, stakeholders don't get us. They don't understand what we're trying to do. All we want to do is amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side, we've got stakeholders or product owners that are saying, are these designers crazy? How are we ever going to ship a product like this? Like, it's super feature rich, like it's this incredible idea, but how are we ever going to get this into market?
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually another piece of that too is for research specifically, right? So a lot of things that I've run into are, you know, research is a roadblock, we don't have the budget for this, and what kind of business value do they provide anyway?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that kind of stuff exists
yeah.
in a stakeholder's mind. So I like to remember these questions and kind of address those when speaking to a stakeholder about a research initiative that we'd like to do or anything
nice,
like that.
Yeah. So you bring that up before they even maybe ask that question.
Absolutely. So, and that kind of leads into my next point where I really need to credit co-creation sessions for this kind of thing, right? So you can really onboard an entire team using that format. So if you bring a cross-functional team into a room
mm-hmm.
and you're super transparent about your process and you make sure they're listened to, their concerns are listened to, they have a full podium to ask any question that they have about what you want to do from a research perspective or even design perspective,
mm-hmm.
that makes all the difference. Because not only am I able to learn what their concerns are and address them
mm-hmm.
right there in the room, they actually feel like they've been heard.
For sure.
They
yeah.
walk away feeling like, okay, I'm a part of this too. I have a stake in the game. Let's get excited and kind of make this thing happen.
Yeah.
So really, it's about transparency and it's about co-creation and making sure that you are speaking their language.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you're an active listener to what they're saying to you, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to just make sure you're doing all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So then would you say this is the quickest and cheapest way to get stakeholder buy-in, or do you have any other methods for that?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it's the quickest and cheapest way. It's just a group session where we're like, okay, this is our idea, this is what we want to do, like, let's all talk about it, let's develop a plan.
Mm-hmm.
I want your feedback on what I'm proposing to make sure that it works for you as well as a
mm-hmm.
stakeholder. So it's really just that open forum of ideas and revisions in terms of what that plan or what that roadmap is. That's
yeah.
the quickest and cheapest way that I've experienced.
Yeah.
I would love to hear from other people too on that front, but yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned that you know that they have some concerns and there's certain questions like it's a roadblock or like what's the value of research? Like, are these common themes that you've just found just because you've had quite a bit of experience, or like, how did you know that those are questions that they would have?
I've heard them directly from them, yeah,
yeah,
from stakeholders and product owners and that kind of thing too. And it's a legitimate concern. I mean, their mandate is to ship a product and get it to market. Like
yeah.
that's what they need to do, and I get that for
yeah.
sure. So in order to address those concerns, I know what we need to do as researchers is to say, okay, this is methodology A.
Mm-hmm.
This is how much time it's going to take to implement, and this is how much money it's going to cost, incentives, that kind of thing,
yeah,
right? Recruitment
yeah.
fees, all the things that come along with research.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you are able to be super clear about time, money, and resources,
mm-hmm.
then they're able to really kind of grasp what that's going to look like and really kind of fit that into their respective roadmap.
Yeah, and then there's also like no surprises too.
Absolutely, yeah, they don't like surprises, and I get it too. Like, we're a little bit of an enigma when it comes to the UX world,
mm-hmm.
so we are constantly trying to break down those barriers and look for new ways of, you know, just being more transparent.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to change or kind of go off of the topic of stakeholder buy-in and just where you work right now and what you've seen. So I'm wondering about more of the organizational structure that you've seen in UX teams.
Mm-hmm.
So currently you're at Canada Post. I imagine that this might be different than what you've seen elsewhere. So if you can talk a little bit about how or where UXR fits in Canada Post and then maybe other things that you've seen elsewhere.
Sure. And I wish I had a whiteboard and I wish you could see this, but I'll do my best to put words to it. So where we're at right now is that we've got our development cycles. So our organization is agile, right? So we have scrum teams that work with different areas of the site itself. So we've got the authentication experiences, mm-hmm. popular tools, that kind of thing.
So, sorry, just to be a bit more clear about that. Mm-hmm. So you work on the website of Canada Post, or is there other products too that you reach?
So we touch everything.
Oh, okay.
All portfolios.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of how Canada Post is structured. So from a research perspective, it's interesting because we don't have enough researchers to be ingrained in each team. I think we've got 8 different product and agile teams.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we've decided to do it, and this is sort of new since I've been here, is to sort of split our methodologies in terms of being upfront and parallel to. So the upfront research is really kind of in the ethnography world, where we're doing a lot of user interviews, some field research when we can get in there, or when we can get out of the building and into the hands of a customer,
mm-hmm.
and really sort of build that foundation for a designer to come back to that data, look at it, read it, understand it, and really get a good sense of who they're building and designing for.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah, and that's upfront and even before the requirement sessions.
Nice.
So we... and this still has yet to happen, but we really want to be a bigger part of defining those requirements based on the research we've already done,
mm-hmm.
That foundational research. So that's what we're focusing on now. But in terms of being more valuable throughout the different sprint cycles, that's when research is really thought of as a roadblock in a lot of ways. So our opportunity there was to sort of rethink how we can stop being a roadblock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the directional research comes into play. So that's where we do things like guerrilla studies, where we leave the building, we go to a coffee shop, we pair a researcher up with a designer, and then we just approach people and say, let me buy you a coffee, give me some feedback on this UI element, how do you feel about this?
Yeah,
and
really
so
cool.
In an afternoon, we can come back with really quick hit insights,
mm-hmm.
and feed that back into the scrum team, and they're able to take that away and kind of do what they do with
it.
Yeah.
Do you have any coffee shops that you guys really like to go to?
Balzac is the best because it's
in Liberty Village or
Ryerson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there's just students there all the time willing
to get a
give
coffee
you feedback
bought, yeah.
and get a free coffee. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no.
That's
so
awesome.
It actually works out really well. So yeah, I think it's going to be a good process moving forward. And again, it's something that POs and stakeholders really can latch onto because it's cheap and we're not interrupting anything that we've already got in place, any current organizational infrastructure.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so I wanted to go back to what you just mentioned about going and doing research in a coffee shop, and you referred to it as guerrilla testing. How did you find out about that, and how did you get people to okay that?
Mm-hmm. Well, guerrilla testing, I mean, isn't necessarily a new method, but so I've known about it for a while, but it essentially is the art of pouncing on people in public and asking for their feedback, full stop. Like, that's basically what it is. But in terms of internal buy-in, the fact that it's cheap and quick really piqued the interest of, you know, POs and stakeholders and that kind of thing. So
there's no, like, I don't know, like, legal issues or, like...
Not really. I mean, we had to think.
NDAs
well, we had to think about that. But I mean, Canada Post isn't really like we don't come out with products that are kind of secret, and we
True,
need to
yeah.
make a big splash in the market around a campaign or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like we don't have a lot of secrets. We're a super old Crown Corp, and that's just kind of who we are. So we don't have to be super secretive around
mm-hmm.
who we are and branding
yeah.
and that kind of thing. But, what was I going to say? But in terms of just, I forgot what I was going to say after that.
I asked how did you get people to, like, jump on board with this idea?
Yeah. So just in terms of getting on board, I mean, yeah, the fact that it was quick and cheap was the best way to get people on board because, again, we're able to be out of the office for an afternoon.
Yeah, which is also
really
nice.
And just get what we need, yeah, for sure, yeah. And we have to, and we had kind of had to sell it a little bit to some of the different directors and some of the different stakeholders, because we need to make sure that the work that we're producing is grounded in reality. Mm-hmm. Like, we can sit in here and we can do our respective journey maps and that kind of thing, but we need to make sure that we have other eyes on what we do, aside from usability testing, which is still good, but we need to just make sure that we're getting our UI elements really understood for, you know, readability, retention, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then in terms of, I think you also asked where I learned about the framework that we had proposed in terms of foundational and directional. Mm-hmm. So there is a management consultancy, and I think they're in Australia. They're called Beaker and Flint.
Okay.
And so they had a really good write-up about how to not be a roadblock from a UXR perspective.
Oh, cool, yeah.
And so they had some ideas around implementing that sort of framework. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we had to mold it into what we needed it to be here, but it actually worked out really well in terms of, okay, so let's start to... Let's not force ourselves into an agile team and pretend that that's going to be okay and everyone's going to be happy with it, because that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So we need to sort of be a little more abstract and think about it in a way, okay, let's think about it from a methodology perspective. Where does this methodology fit in our current process, mm-hmm. and how would it be best used? So we had to kind of flow some things, whiteboard, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it really ended up just being like I described already, the foundational up front, and then the directional kind of in parallel to the different teams.
Yeah. Okay, so going off of the guerrilla research or guerrilla methods that you just mentioned, are there other methods or techniques that people are learning in the user research field that you think are really great right now or that other people should know about?
Mm-hmm. For me, service design is really that new, that kind of evolution in terms of UX research. Mm-hmm. I think that, especially for Canada Post, because we do rely heavily, well, our customers still rely heavily on retail locations, that we really do need to focus on that physical touch point. So, yes, we're doing a really, really great job at launching amazing digital experiences, but that experience has to translate into that retail experience as well. So when you go into a Shoppers Drug Mart, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the signage like? What are these employees saying to you that can still make this whole process a great experience?
Yeah.
So that, to me, is kind of the next step in terms of holistic thinking around understanding people, moments in time, how are they interacting with our service from a multi-touch point perspective.
Mm-hmm. I just had a question too. I don't know if you would know the answer to this, but one time I ordered a new bed frame and it came through Canada Post, I believe. Was it? Yeah, it was Canada Post. Yeah. And it ended up in like a really random convenience store.
Oh, okay. A Max or something?
Not even. It was like an independently owned convenience store. I'm just wondering how people like become retailers for Canada Post.
Yeah, that's actually a question I don't have the answer to, but that just speaks further to the point of service design being that evolution and keeping in mind, what is this experience like for people? Mm-hmm. Like, do they want to go into this not so clean looking convenience store?
Which was my experience, yeah.
to pick up their package that they probably paid a lot of money for. So again, it's like we really do need to keep in mind that touch point for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the Shoppers Drug Mart, I think Rexall is also a Canada Post.
Yeah.
Those make sense. And I think now, like, you see a Shoppers Drug Mart and you assume that there's a Canada Post in there. Like, I don't think it's always, but like...
Often.
Yeah, it's not unusual now, where I think at first it was a bit weird, but now that like it's been around for a while, it's like the two kind of go hand in hand.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So in addition to service design being that next evolution of UX research, some organizations are actually using human-centered design as kind of like a filter within their respective processes. So what that means is they kind of have a specific set of criteria that they use to measure each idea as it relates to their products and services. So if that idea meets all of those criteria, which is that mm-hmm. human-centered design filter, then it's able to get into the development process and kind of go from there. Mm-hmm. So that's my high-level view of what some organizations are doing using human-centered design.
Yeah.
Some organizations do it differently, but that's it's kind of an interesting way of making sure that any idea is going to be rooted in actual human need.
Yeah.
So to me, it's a really, really interesting way of just kind of putting a little bit of a kind of a filter within your process.
Yeah. Do you think, is it just like one person who gets these new ideas and like goes through a checklist and says like, yes, it's met all these like human-centered design criteria, or do you know how that
I'm not totally sure of the logistics and the details, mm-hmm. but I know that it just depends how that organization works, right? Like if it's an agile team that's coming up with ideas, then that could be it. But I have a feeling that I know they're bigger organizations, so a lot of these bigger organizations have more of an innovation team.
Oh, okay.
So if that innovation team is coming up with these new and cool ideas, then it would have to go through that whole kind of gauntlet of criteria.
Yeah. Okay, so again, you've had quite an extensive background and like journey to getting to research. I'm curious to get your feedback and your opinion on what advice you have for people who are trying to get into a research position.
Mm-hmm. So my advice would be to make sure that you spend some time understanding the ethnography side of research, because I always think it's super critical to understand on a deeper level human behavior and what drives a society or a community and that kind of thing. I think that makes you a more well-rounded and valuable researcher.
I think that does just makes you a more well-rounded individual in general.
Absolutely. I fully agree with that for sure. And I don't know if you've heard of EPIC. It's that organization. Sam Lapner does some online classes on there as well.
Okay.
But it's a really amazing organization that is just kind of dedicated to providing practical uses of ethnography mm-hmm. for UX researchers and other people kind of in the technology realm.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really amazing resource, and I recommend everyone look into it for sure.
Okay. For people who are not familiar with what ethnography is, mm-hmm. would you be able to give just like a definition?
Yeah, so that's kind of the deeper study of humans as a whole. So I mean, I'm hoping that I'm right on this, but it's more of a subset of anthropology. So when you look at ethnography, that's more of the study of a community, the people within it, their behaviors,
mm-hmm.
Just how they go about their day-to-day. So it's the type of research that takes a long time. It's nothing that's short, and it's usually expensive, which is why a lot of organizations kind of stay away from it,
mm-hmm.
which is why there's kind of a bigger need for a thing like EPIC, that organization that kind of gives more practical use of it. So that kind of
that's cool. I'm definitely gonna look into that.
Yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation. Okay, so I'm curious to know, and this is my favorite question to ask researchers. What is it that people think you do for a living?
Yeah, so my grandpa thinks I mail letters.
Aww.
And but mostly people think I kind of sit in a lab and watch people scuttle around technology.
With a two-way mirror? Or?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. Just like clipboard, glasses, watching people like mice clicking on keyboards and stuff. So that's sort of the basics of what people think I do. I with some people I go a little bit deeper, but if I'm in a social setting or at a party or whatever, it's more just like I study people and how they use different digital products and services.
That's
kind of just what I say I do, and then we usually leave it at that unless they have more questions. Sometimes people totally get it, and sometimes people are like, what is even UX? And then I'm just gonna leave that alone. So
there's been times where I'll be like the same thing. I'll be like, oh, I'm a UX researcher, like if I'm at a party or something, and they're like, oh, and then I'm like, do you know what that is? And they're like, no. But then sometimes if I say, do you know what that is, because I'm just like curious, people are like, oh yeah, of course I do. I'm like, oh okay.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
I'm just asking.
Like, yeah, yeah.
They get kind of like offended, or they'll be like, yeah, yeah, UX. Like, I know what that is. So, right. I'm like, well, that's half of it. So,
that's half. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There.
Yeah.
All right. So, is there anything else that you wanted to add to our discussion before we wrap up?
Yeah, sure. So, I wanted to let you and everyone know that Canada Post is looking for product designers. So if you are interested in that space and you want to submit your portfolio, you can do so by emailing either myself or looking me up on LinkedIn, and I can give you more details on how to submit your work.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you're part of the UXRTO community, you could probably find you on Slack too, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So just Dale.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is. Yeah.
Dale McRae, if there's any other Dales out there.
Yeah.
Are there any like specific requirements for the product design position that people might want to know about?
Not really. I mean, we're just looking for people who, you know, have a solid process and an interesting approach. So that's really all we're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks again for sharing your background and your insights with myself and whoever is listening. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. And again, if you ever have questions that you would like me to ask in the interviews that I do with other researchers, designers, product designers, anyone who's part of our community, please feel free to send me a message on Slack, and we'll see you next time.